Everyone, I call this meeting of the Committee on Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy to order. Members, please mute your mics. This remote hearing is conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed at House Television webcast. Members, with that, I ask the Committee Legislative Assistants to take the roll.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor present. Vice Chair Jay Zhong. Vice Chair Jay Zhong. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton present. Baker. Baker.
Baker present.
Baker present. Daphne.
Daphne present.
Daphne present. Frankie.
Present.
Frankie present. Greenman.
Present.
Greenman present. Haley. Haley. Jurgens.
Jurgens present.
Jurgens present. Cagle.
Present.
Cagle present. Katiza Watun.
Present.
Katiza Watun present. Olson.
Present.
Olson present. Tujong.
Present.
Tujong present. Vice Chair Jay Zhong. Vice Chair Jay Zhong. Haley. Haley. Chair, we have quorum.
Thank you so much. Members, there's a quorum present. I will now ask for a motion to approve the minutes for February 10th, 2021.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson moves the approval for the minutes of February 10th, 2021. Members, any discussions or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Seeing none, the motion prevails. The minutes for February 10th is adopted. Members, we do have three bills before us today. And one of our bill, the bills are based on UI. So, just wanted to welcome Representative Zach Stevenson. Representative Stevenson, you have a bill, House File 327. So I'd like to move House File 327 be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome, and please introduce yourself and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As you mentioned, I'm Zach Stevenson, representing Champlain Coon Rapids in the House, and here to talk to you today about the Shared Work Program. And first, maybe a little background. If you, like I was when I first started looking into this bill or this issue 6 months ago, knew very little about shared work. It's a program that's administered by our Unemployment Insurance Division. The program allows employers to divide available hours of work among a group of employees instead of implementing a full layoff. These employees may then receive partial unemployment insurance benefits while working reduced hours. So, I think an example is helpful here. If you have an employer that has to reduce their labor costs by 10%, without shared work, they might elect to lay off 10% of their workforce. Under the shared work program, instead, they might reduce everybody who works in that class of work, their hours by 10%. And then those employees under the shared work program would be able to get some unemployment insurance payments in order to offset some of the lost hours. This is a great program because it allows employers to keep experienced and trained staff. It avoids future hiring and training costs, allows them to increase operations quickly when business conditions improve, and avoid layoffs, which creates goodwill and financial stability for the workforce and the community. A little bit more about the program. Employers manage the plan, but submit it to deed. Health and pension plans have to continue the same as before the shared work program. And employees have to be full or part-time. They can't be seasonal or temporary. And they have to have been with the employer for at least 1 year. My bill relates to that last requirement, that an employee have to been working with the employer for 1 year before being eligible for the plan. I first learned about this from a constituent who had been with his employer for 9 months when they implemented a shared work plan, and he was pretty, and rightfully in my view, upset that he couldn't participate in the plan. He just had his work, his hours reduced and couldn't obtain any relief. It turns out, after I did some digging, that this is one of the most restrictive requirements in the country for shared work plans. No other state has a one-year requirement. Many states, including Arkansas, Kansas, Maine, Missouri, Nebraska, and Rhode Island, have no length of employment requirement at all. My bill takes a middle road approach. It reduces the length of employment requirement to 3 months, which is consistent with four other states, including Maryland, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and our neighbors in Wisconsin. Now, we passed a temporary version of this bill last summer in one of our COVID relief sessions. I think it actually passed as a standalone bill. I was about to say it's one of our COVID relief packages, but I think it passed standalone. And it was just a temporary bill that operated to the end of calendar year 2020. We wanted to see how it went. We wanted to give the UI Advisory Council to have a chance to look at the bill. Both of those things have now happened. I went very smoothly. The UI Advisory Council took a look at the bill. I understand there was no negative feedback. Throughout the committee hearings we had last year, floor session, and up to this point this year, I've heard no opposition to this bill. It's a pretty common sense idea that a year is probably too long to justify the merits of the program. I want to thank Senator Rarick, my partner in the Senate, who I've been working with on this issue. And thanks also to the chair for hearing the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Members, this is an alternative to layoffs. And under the Federal CARES Act, we were receiving full reimbursement. I just wanted to ask if the department can clarify that so that we are aware of the benefits of having this program at the state level and ensuring that we get federal reimbursement. Sorry, I'm muted. This question goes to the Deputy Commissioner.
My apologies, Chair Noor. Yes, that's correct. The CARES Act and the Continued Assistance Act reimburse the state for the cost of shared work.
Any discussions, member? Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Stevenson. Did you say, has anybody contacted you? Is there any opposition to this bill that you know of from the business community or from any unions or anything like that? That's a question to the author.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton. I have not heard any opposition from anyone. I reached out to several business groups when I was first bringing this bill forward last summer. I thought perhaps they would be actually interested in openly supporting the bill because the shared work program is beneficial for our business community. And what I heard was a lot of people saying, yeah, we think it's a good idea. We think it's a good bill. They weren't really wanting to put their weight behind it. But I've never heard in the almost, 8-9 months I've been working on this issue, I have yet to hear anyone opposed to it for any reason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Members, this is a very good program, and I think this is common sense legislation. I'm hoping that we'll include in our omnibus bill. Representative Stevenson, any closing remarks?
It's a good bill.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Members, now we do have the next bill, which is House File 106 from Chair Dabney. Chair Dabney, will you move your bill?
And, thank you very much.
Go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 106 to be before the committee and considered for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've talked to some of the members. You do have a technical amendment to the bill. Do you want to move the technical amendment for the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the HF 106A1 amendment to be before the committee.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. So your amendment is a technical amendment. Did you want to cover a little bit and describe the amendment?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 106, as it currently stands, proposes repealing the provision in Minnesota's unemployment insurance statutes that discriminates against individuals who are receiving either Social Security disability or Social Security old age benefits when they apply to also receive unemployment benefits that they would otherwise have earned. The A1 amendment simply deletes all references to Social Security from statute, because if House File 106 were to become law, any references to Social Security would then be redundant. I ask for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment is before us. Members, all those in favor, please say aye. Or any discussion?
Aye.
Sorry.
Aye.
So I gather that is there's no discussion. Everybody has voted aye. Opposed? See none. The motion is adopted. Mr. Chair, or Chair Devney, to your bill as amended.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the vote on the A1 amendment. As I indicated, House File 106 proposes a repeal of two provisions in statute that penalize those otherwise eligible unemployment insurance applicants who applied for Social Security old age or disability benefits during the time that later becomes part of their base period for determining state unemployment insurance benefits. Minnesota is now the last state in the nation that discriminates against these Social Security beneficiaries in this way. Senior citizens are now the fastest growing group of student loan borrowers. That may come as a surprise for members, but the point is, and I'll have a couple of other examples, retirement, as we might think about it, is not the retirement that it used to be. According to a 2019 study by Synchrony Bank, the average person approaching retirement has accounts totaling $172,000, far too little to maintain a dignified and long life. The National Council on Aging reports that 30% of older households are paying mortgages or home equity loans. 25% of seniors are financially insecure, living on less than 250% of the federal poverty level, also according to NCOA. 30% of retirees rely on credit cards to pay basic household expenses. The rising cost of healthcare that we're all aware of can often challenge the elderly. And as we know, the number of defined benefit pension plans has plummeted 73% since 1986. So, as I've said, retirement today is not your father's retirement. We currently have a state approach that errs on the side of making sure that a individual who had a high-paying job retired and then took a low-paying job to stay active, stay engaged in their community, and then lost that job through no fault of their own and applies for Social Security, is not disproportionately benefiting from our UI system. But what we're not doing then is recognizing that there are many individuals who enter their golden years in a financially moderate position, having earned moderate income throughout their life. And for them, having a job after applying for Social Security is not something to keep them busy. It's something to help pay the bills. And I would contend, and my testifiers will contend, that it is not appropriate then for the state to discriminate against those people who are otherwise eligible to receive unemployment insurance benefits. I've got two testifiers with me today, Mr. Chair, Mary Jo George from AARP, and Ms. Colleen Barrett, also with a member of AARP, and in addition, members posted to the website, and I believe in our packets, is written testimony from Roger Cadigan. Mr. Chair, I don't know if you want to bring up the testifiers at this time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Devney. So I'd like to proceed by inviting Mary Jo George. Please welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself and also your affiliation and proceed.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Knorr and members of the committee. My name is Mary Jo George, and I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP Minnesota. On behalf of our members, we want to thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 106, which, as Representative Dabney has said, repeals the Social Security offset to Minnesota's unemployment insurance program. We also want to thank Representative Dabney for his leadership in sponsoring this bill. And in a moment, you'll hear from one of our members, Colleen Barrett, who will tell her story. But as you've heard today, Representative Dabney's covered this bill very well. Minnesota is the only state in the nation that has this Social Security offset. And so we believe it's time that we repeal this law that unfairly penalizes some or certain older workers for receiving the modest Social Security benefit that they have worked their entire life for. Again, as Representative Dabney stated, retirement is not the same as it was 15 or 20 years ago. People just don't have the pensions or the savings that are supposed to last them for a lifetime. Despite its critical importance, Social Security benefits are modest, meaning many people have to work and collect Social Security at the same time. In fact, older workers are the fastest growing segment of workers, making these UI benefits even more critical. Another reason they are so critical is that older workers often face additional barriers, such as ageism and continued health risks due to COVID, delaying their return to work that they want or need. But in some cases, we are hearing now that people are being forced back to work even though they have underlying health care conditions, which is putting their health at jeopardy now too. Job loss disruptions for older workers can have a lasting impact. Many never recover financially. And so we have been, it's no surprise, we've been hearing from many of our members about this. As a result of the law, many workers have seen significant reductions in their UI benefits that they were counting on to make ends meet. And it's been particularly harsh for older, low-income workers whose UI benefits have been completely zeroed out as a result of this law and have lost out on all federal pandemic assistance as well. What's more, the law is very expansive. It applies to workers who have not yet even started collecting their Social Security benefits, but have only filed or intend to file for them. We think this isn't right either. Finally, I just want to say at AARP, we believe all workers who have funds paid into the UI system on their behalf and if eligible, should have a right to these benefits regardless of age or Social Security. I think, you know, from our perspective, we don't see this as double dipping. We see that the retirement benefits and the UI benefits were designed with distinct purposes in mind. So in light of the economic crisis we face, we do urge your support for the repeal of this law. Thank you, and I will now hand it over to Colleen.
Colleen Barrett, welcome to the committee and introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony. Travis, do we have Ms. Barrett?
Ms. Chair, she was here at the beginning of the committee. It appears she has stepped off. I'm not sure. She did not give me a heads up that she was stepping off, so I don't know if she's back. If she comes back, I'll let her back in and notify you, but I do not see her in the room at the moment.
Thank you, Mr. Riso. Chair Dabney, any additional comments or members, any discussions? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And either to Representative Dabney or to the testifier, I guess I have two questions. The first one is, what's with the delay? You know, you stated Minnesota is the only state. Can you give me any background on why we have not done this earlier?
Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hamilton, thank you for that question. About 10 or 12 years ago, I believe it was in 2008, I worked with AARP at that time in an attempt to repeal this provision. If my memory serves, and that's always, as you can imagine, a dicey proposition, but if my memory serves correctly, at that time, Minnesota statute was that Social Security recipients simply could not receive unemployment benefits. We were able to reach a compromise at that time, which was the reduction of UI benefits equal to 50% of Social Security benefits. Now we're coming back, I think, in response to the fact that Minnesota is now the last in the nation, as well as the impact, looking at the impact of the pandemic on employment and recognizing that it's time that we repeal this provision.
And my second question, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My second question, Representative Dabney, and I ask this because we don't, no longer, we're not able to run into people in the hallway and stuff like that, and people talking to us about these bills in general. And so have you run into any opposition with this bill that you know of?
Chair Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, no one has contacted me in opposition to this bill, no.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Dabney, and Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Dabney. Mr. Reese, do we have Ms. Barrett? Oh, sorry to hear that. We were just informed that her computer crashed, and it's in the virtual system that we operate sometimes. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Chair Dabney, I'm not sure if you can answer this question. From reading the bill, it says, or am I correct in saying that it does not include the survivor benefits?
Chair Dabney.
You know, Mr. Chair, Representative Frankie, thank you for that question. I'm going to throw that to probably nonpartisan staff. Both Ms. Sholin and Ms. James have been very helpful in the construction of this, and they may very well have a better understanding of that than I do.
Ms. James.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Frankie. So there wasn't an offset for Social Security survivor benefits. That was in the existing statute. So there wasn't an offset before. There won't be an offset at all now. Does that answer the question?
Representative Frankie.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Noor. So you could continue to get survivor benefits and unemployment, or you could not? I guess I'm, you know, in the virtual state here, I'm flipping between pages on my computer trying to figure this out. And if not, why does survivor benefits is not included?
Ms. James?
So under the existing statute, which is section 268.085, subdivision 4, that's the subdivision that's going to be repealed by this bill. But previously that statute said this subdivision does not apply to Social Security survivor benefits. So before, there was no impact on Social Security survivor benefits, and again, and now there still is no impact on Social Security survivor benefits. I don't know the reason for why, but that there's no change there, I guess, in the impact.
Representative Frankie, well, maybe we can ask the department to give us any clarifying remarks on that. We have Deputy Commissioner Chafin.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I believe that's correct. We have Program Director Jim Hegman is with us this afternoon as well. So, Jim, is there any clarification that you think is important here?
Mr. Hegman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. Marta's explanation, I think, was correct. The theory is that if the benefits were based on your own income as opposed to survivor benefits, which are based on somebody else's income, that was my recollection from many, many years ago when the language was last updated. So Marta's correct. It's not, it has never been deductible survivor benefits, and that would be unchanged in the proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Hegman. Representative Frankie, any follow-up?
No, thank you. I think I got it now. If I'm correct in saying that, so currently the survivor benefit is not used to exclude you from the 50-50 percentage on the unemployment eligibility, correct?
Mr.
So
Hegman?
That would not change.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is correct. It is unchanged, correct.
Representative Franke.
Got it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much. We now have Colleen Barrett with us. So welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Noor and members of the committee. I apologize for losing my access to the internet, and I will continue. I'm with AARP. My name is Colleen Barrett. I'm here today to tell you how Minnesota's Social Security offset has impacted my financial stability, health, and well-being. I started working when I was 14 years old, and over the years, my family has tried to do everything right. We worked hard, owned a wonderful house, saved for our son's education, and invested for retirement. We hoped our future was secure. Then the Great Recession came, and we used our savings. Then we borrowed money to survive, but lost everything, all of our savings, our retirement investments, and finally our house. When the recession ended, we slowly began to recover and are still paying off those debts. As we both reached, my husband and myself, reached age 65, a new problem surfaced, Medicare. I have severe inflammatory arthritis, but for decades I had been taking a drug that was 100% effective, and our insurance paid for it with help for co-pays from the drug manufacturer until the insurance kicked in. At 65, we're required to go on Medicare, and suddenly this effective and life-saving tier 5 drug became prohibitively expensive. It went from $5 a month to $1,650 a month copay. I'm saying that smiling because it's pretty brutal. So at the age that many hope to retire at, I had 2 part-time jobs and claimed Social Security earlier than I had hoped to do. My Social Security is $906 a month, and it's not enough to cover drug, much less share of food, utilities, rent, transportation, and our college-age son who now lives at home and is taking college community college classes from home. When the COVID-19 pandemic resulted in the closure of both of my employers' businesses and I was laid off, I qualified for $132 a week in unemployment insurance benefits. But I learned that I would only get $23 a week. Why? Because I get Social Security and Minnesota offsets my unemployment payment because of that. Not getting my full unemployment benefit insurance is once again spiraling me towards financial insecurity. It has impacted my physical health and keeping me from being able to afford the drug that prevents me from becoming crippled and in constant pain. I feel Minnesota's offset law unfairly takes advantage of seniors and makes them feel disposable during a time of vulnerability and need. Minnesota's laws obligate my employers to deduct part of my wages for state unemployment insurance, yet Minnesota keeps most of my benefit because I receive Social Security. As has been brought up in prior testimony with the bill, Minnesota now is the only state in the country that penalizes older workers in this way. Many of Minnesota's seniors have the same experiences as us during the recession and need to continue to work, but are often unable to because of pandemic layoffs and health risks. Please repeal Minnesota's Social Security offset now. More than ever, Minnesota's older workers need and are counting on you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Barrett, for your testimony and sharing with us your situation. So members, as we all know, COVID-19 has impacted almost everyone due to the economic fallout. These are some of the issues that we need to be able to tackle as a committee. So thank you so much for sharing your testimony.
Thank you.
Members, any questions or discussions? Representative Juggins. Juggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I've got the statute book here, and I'm trying to understand some of the questions that Representative Franke had and some of the – I thought I understood it, but the more I look at it, I'm not so certain if this does what we think it does. Well, I think we know what it does, but I don't know if we fully understand what the old statute did, because there is language under subdivision 4A that includes Social Security disability benefits. Both section A, subdivision 4 and 4A. Wait a second. I think I just answered my own question. Representative Dabney, your amendment only repeals section A, subdivision 4, but it leaves in place 4A. Is that accurate, Mr. Chair, if you will yield?
Chair Devin.
I'm going to ask, nonpartisan staff to answer the technical dimension of the question. I think Representative Juergens, where you're going is differentiating Social Security old age benefit from Social Security disability benefit, which under current law, if within the base period an individual has applied for or started to receive either of those benefits, Minnesota deducts 50% of that, the value of those benefits, from the unemployment insurance benefits they were otherwise would be eligible for. House File 106 repeals both the provisions affecting both of those programs. But as to the technical piece, Mr. Chair, if we could again go to Ms. James, I would imagine.
Ms. James?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Juergens, so in the bill, Subdivision 4 is repealed completely, as you noted in the amendment. Subdivision 4A is the lines that are being repealed in the bill are lines, page 2, lines 13 to 19, or I should say they're being struck. And those lines are the lines that contain the offset, like Representative Dabney just said. In Subdivision 4A, which again, Subdivision 4A is the disability benefits, there's also language about eligibility. And as Representative Dabney mentioned earlier, an applicant still has to otherwise qualify for UI benefits. And so this leaves the eligibility piece in place for Social Security disability, but it removes the offset, meaning that receiving Social Security disability isn't going to affect the amount of UI payment you can get. But that's a different question than if you are eligible for unemployment to begin with.
Representative Juergens.
And Mr. Chair, so as amended, this bill repeals Subdivision 4 and modifies Subdivision 4A.
Ms. James?
Mr. Chair and Representative Juergens, that is correct.
Okay, I've got it now. It took me a while to wrap my head around that, but I've got it now. Thank you. And as long as I am speaking, I would like to say that I'm hearing some great arguments related to Social Security that you might hear at another time in another committee or on the House floor with my bill that would completely remove state income taxes on all Social Security benefits. Because I think a lot of the same arguments about the limited income that many of these recipients have that we're hearing from AARP today and others would apply to that as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Juergens. Any other questions or discussions from members? If none, Chair Devney, your closing remarks, and if you will renew your motion as amended.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for, again, your support for the A1 amendment, also for the conversation. Thank you to staff for their support and assistance on this, and to the testifiers. Members, as I said in my opening comments, the way Minnesota statute is now is we bias the system to avoid that rare situation where a highly paid individual retires, goes on Social Security, takes a moderate paying job, and then loses that job and applies for unemployment benefits. I think there's a simpler way of responding that biases instead towards that moderate income employee who's spent their lives in moderate paying jobs and now trying to balance off their economic needs has applied for Social Security as well as continuing to work. The simple approach is also a traditional American approach. I've got good news, members. Pitchers and catchers report tomorrow. Spring is coming. And the tradition in the United States and the tradition in baseball is the tie goes to the runner. When the ball and the runner arrive at the base at the same time, tie goes to the runner. And I would say when retirement benefits and unemployment benefits arrive in someone's life at the same time, tie should go to the runner, and they should receive the full unemployment benefits from Minnesota that they would otherwise qualify for. Mr. Chair, with that, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 106, as amended, be laid over to pass, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair Devney. Well stated. As you noted, Chair Devney renews his motion, House File 106, as amended, they recommended to be included in the omnibus bill. So thank you so much to the testifiers and everybody. So the final bill we have is House File 677, which is Representative Toujon. Please welcome to the, you're a member of the committee, if you will move the House File 677. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Nora. I'm Representative Toujon presenting House File 677, and I would like to move House File 677 for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Xiong. To your bill, let us know what we want, you know, what is in this bill. So thank you so much. Welcome.
Certainly, Chair. Chair and members of the committee, I have with me House File 677, which is a bill that is to help provide some modification to the definition of qualified training under the current system. And so currently to qualify for unemployment insurance, an applicant, you know, must either be engaged in actively searching for a job or participating in a qualified training. And so this bill would add to that qualified training portion, adult basic education. Adult basic education, such as English, learning English as a second language, getting their GED or obtaining basic computer skills. And so it would, you know, expand the definition of what is qualified training so that, you know, folks that are, you know, either trying to improve their skills are not being, you know, excluded from qualifying under the qualified training definition for unemployment insurance. And so with that, I'm open for any questions or comments. Thank you, Chair.
Any discussion, members, on House File 677? I just also wanted to recognize Representative Haley, who is also in attendance. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Zhang, for bringing this forward. I have a couple questions, and I'm not sure if you can answer, or maybe there's some other department staff available. I know that because of COVID, we reduced the requirements of what an applicant needed to be doing as far as looking for a job during COVID. Do you know how those were reduced and what the current expectation is?
Yeah, so I think was it Dariel or someone from Deed might be able to answer that, because I think we did have a discussion on that with the chair.
Thank you so much. I think you're asking the department, Mr. Hegman, on the question of the assistance requirement for work search.
Mr. Chair, members, the work search requirement is modified. It's not far from what it normally is. Typically, if folks are expected to go back to their last job, their primary responsibility is to stay in contact with their last employer and to be returning to work with that employer. The pandemic makes all of this rather complicated, obviously, as the circumstance of change in the work search requirements in light of the pandemic are a little bit, not the requirements so much, but the practicalities of all of that become a little bit different. So we're all feeling our way through this, but that's where we are treating them as we typically treat what we perceive to be a temporary cessation in working with an assumption of returning back to the last job.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Hegman. Does that mean are there other requirements as far as potentially interviewing for other jobs or applying for other jobs, or are those types of requirements not in existence now because of COVID?
Mr. Hegman. Yep, you're muted.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the requirements to be searching for other work where that individual is completely detached from their last employment would stay in place. Obviously, complicated situations now in the midst of the pandemic.
Representative Haley.
Mr. Hegman, can you just describe what those are?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative, the normal requirements, again, one of the challenges we have is there's 340,000 people currently unemployed, so it is a push just administratively to pursue all of those elements. So the normal requirement would be stay in touch with your last employer, as I said, and that looks like that's the vast, vast majority of the people that are currently unemployed. We're also in the middle of winter right now, so winter in Minnesota, usually we see a switch from about a threefold increase in activity for seasonal workers who are also similarly situated, and the assumption is they're going back to their last employer. So we're treating those who are unemployed as a result of the pandemic similar to the other ones. So then the question would become which workers who are currently unemployed are not going to be going back to their last workers. And that is our last employment. That is a challenging thing to sort of figure out right now, which workers are permanently separated and which are not. I think we're all struggling with trying to identify those. When we can, for those groups of workers who we can tell are not going back to their last place of employment, then we would administer the normal work search requirements, albeit inside of the context that there would still be a requirement or no requirement that you might endanger your own health or safety through any of those things. It's also a challenge now to find for interviewing. Obviously, everything's very different. We're all meeting remotely right now. So all of these challenges have been tough for work searchers, tough for us to try to get our arms around exactly what constitutes a really aggressive work search in the midst of a pandemic.
Ms. Representative Haley.
Thank you. I guess just my concern, and this isn't necessarily related to this bill, but a concern that we do need to connect our workforce development centers with our unemployment insurance offices and bridge that gap again so that job seekers are better connecting with folks that have employment opportunities. So my concern as that relates to this bill is, are we just prolonging somebody's unemployment by kind of continuing to extend any requirement in that job search? I mean, we know most of our unemployed, or the highest percentage of our unemployed, are hospitality workers, and there's no assurance that all those workers will go back to the hospitality industry. At this point, the state has no plan as to when we're going to fully reopen, the hospitality industry, hotels, restaurants, et cetera. So, I have significant concern about that we don't do things that have unintended consequences that just extend the situation for somebody. But getting back to this particular language, Representative Zhang, so is there a time limit on this, what you're proposing here? I mean, somebody could be going back to school for a year or 2 years, or do you have a time limit on when they could receive these benefits and be doing some of this training?
Yeah, so I think this, Chair, I think this falls back under the Section 124D, and I would pass it off to Deed to get into more detail on that. I think they would have a better answer.
Mr. Hegman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Under normal circumstances, hard to get back to that, but under normal circumstances, obviously unemployment benefits are limited. And for instance, if somebody needed English as a second language, for example, then their work search, if that was a critical need for them, would under these provisions be making progress in that classwork for a period of time. So that would partially replace, and that's how all approved training works. It partially replaces the work search requirement where that's appropriate. And going back to your previous appoint representative, that work would take place within the career force location. So this just opens up our toolkit to give additional options, particularly for those workers who, as you say, maybe in the hospitality businesses, maybe that work is less available, but in order to move into other works, they might need a little bit of extra training someplace. This just opens up our toolkit of the whole system to get the right kind of work. Normally benefits last up to 26 weeks, and so one would assume that this sort of training would be very, very short term and just make somebody much more employable who maybe was cycling between jobs that weren't as stable. And that's I believe, the representative's intent in this legislation.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've completed my questions.
Thank you so much. So this I see as an opportunity for retraining and upskilling individuals who have lost their jobs so they can find sustainable employment and also increase their ability to find better jobs. So this is something I think we can all do to allow workers to be able to find jobs if just in case they lost their employment. So thank you so much, Representative Du Jong, for bringing this bill forward. Any discussions, members? Seeing none, Representative Du Jong, will you please renew your motion and give us your closing remarks?
I would like to renew motion to include House File 677 for possible inclusion, and hope you all support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Du Jong, for bringing this bill forward. As you renewed your motion, House File 677 be recommended to be included in the omnibus bill for the Workforce and Business Development Committee. So thank you so much. Members, any other questions that you may have? I know we do have bills before us next on Wednesday. And please feel free to reach out if you have any questions before the hearing. We're still waiting for the bill from DEED for the governor's recommendation, and we'll talk more about it when we get the bill. So having said that, we don't have any other agenda items before us, so the meeting for today is adjourned.